This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will spend some time going back over the week that was. For that, Cardiff Garcia from the blog FT Alphaville is in our bureau in New York. Neela Richardson from Bloomberg Government is in our Washington studios. Hey, guys.
Hey, Kai.
So let's move away from data for a second, Cardiff, and get to the politics of the American economy. First of all, we have a budget for the first time in a long, long while.
We do, although I really just don't think that we should all be high-fiving ourselves because Congress finally decided to do its job.
But it hasn't done its job in like 5 years, yo.
You're right. I'm just saying we're kind of holding the expectations bar really low, so it's easy to step over. And by the way, you know, Politico made an interesting point earlier this morning, which is that the size of this budget, okay, is smaller if you adjust for inflation than George W. Bush's budget was 6 years ago.
Wow.
So if you, like me, think that, you know, Congress and the government and fiscal policymakers haven't done enough to support the economy, this still isn't really that much to get excited about.
Neela, are they high-fiving themselves in Washington?
No, they're getting ready for the debt ceiling debate, I think.
Oh, man, you are such a buzzkill. Holy cow.
That's why you come to me.
That's right. That's right. File under buzzkill.
I think there are bigger fish to fry on the fiscal picture, and they're going to fry them in February when they can really hold the Treasury's head underwater on this issue of the debt ceiling. So let's expect that Congress will pick up the pace on the dissension and really try to get some of their issues in tandem with this agreement.
That's kind of a gruesome image, holding Treasury's head under the water.
Do you really think,
Neela, that the debt limit fight is going to be real this time? I mean, we got so close last time and it all worked out. Why isn't that going to be the case this time?
I think it will all work out. But, you know, the theatrics surrounding it will keep us on the edge of our seat this time as well. We've seen this movie. You know, they always say the sequel is not as exciting as the first one.
Yeah.
So maybe it won't be as exciting this time around.
Hey, Cardiff. So another thing in Washington, actually, is, as long as we're talking about it, unemployment benefits, which expired December the 28th for 1.3 million people, long-term unemployment benefits. They just kind of died in the Senate. And it seems to me like nobody noticed. They went away and was it.
You know, and it's really too bad because even if the economic case for extending these benefits weren't strong, the humanitarian case is incredibly strong. This is a class of people that tends to be discriminated against in the workplace. The effects of long-term unemployment are incredibly debilitating financially and psychologically. And yet the economic case for doing it is also very strong. This is money that would almost immediately be spent and be circulated back into the economy. So this is just, I think, another example of Congress shooting itself in the foot.
Neela, reality check here. Will the reinstatement of these benefits come back, or is it really and truly gone?
I hope so, Kai. I couldn't agree with Cardiff more on this one. If they don't come back, up to 5 million people will lose their benefits this year. So this is a real crisis for people. And so there is some bipartisan agreement, not a lot, but enough to get an extension passed through Congress, at least pass through the Senate. So this is something to watch in terms of getting goodwill to Congress again and solving a real problem in the economy.
All right. Last question for the week. A bit of a retrospective. Ben Bernanke, the outgoing chairman of the Fed, made what is probably going to be his last public appearance this week at a seminar at the Brookings Institution. Neela, I was struck by a lot of what he said, but mostly by the fact that he said communication was so difficult. It was so hard for him to get the message out about what he was trying to do.
Yes, in the age of the social world, communication's hard, even for the Fed. And he also talked about the reputation cost that the Fed is still experiencing for saving the economy in terms of the political backlash from QE and all of the money that was spent rescuing these insolvent financial institutions. I think going forward, communication in the Fed is going to be critical in meandering the taper and reducing that stimulus to the economy.
I will be curious to see how Janet Yellen does at that first press conference and see exactly what it's like, since it was kind of her idea for the Fed to be more communicative. Quickly, outgoing thoughts about Ben Bernanke?
You know, I think the immediate sort of take on his legacy is that he acted splendidly and boldly and cleverly when a crisis was really looming. But in the time since the crisis was stabilized, he made monetary policy lurch in the right direction. He made it more transparent and he improved communications, but he didn't do it aggressively enough. And because of that, we've experienced this period of very sluggish growth. But, I mean, there's a lot more to be studied on this, and it will be studied for many years, if not decades to come.
And you'll hear about it here. Cardiff Garcia from the blog FT Alphaville and Neela Richardson from Bloomberg Government. Thanks, you guys.
Thank you,
Thanks, Kai.